At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Talking in the Rain. I'm your host, Sara Unju, and today I have multi-instrumentalist Adrienne Hyde with me. She will be introducing herself in a second, but before that, I want to let you know that Early Music Vancouver's 2024 Summer Festival has begun, and this year's theme is Bach Untamed. They will be revisiting some of Bach's work with some new interpretations alongside some other early music. And you can catch Adrienne Hyde perform on August 8th at 1 p.m. as part of their New Generation Artists Showcase. And I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much for joining me, Adrienne. Do you want to get started by introducing yourself to the audience a little bit, who you are, what you do, and then we can get into my questions?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Adrienne Hyde. I'm a multi-instrumentalist. I'm originally from the Washington, D.C. area in good old America, not as cool as Canada, but I love being in Canada. So I'm excited to be heading to Vancouver this summer to play at Early Music Vancouver. And yeah, like I said, I'm a multi-instrumentalist and I specialize in playing early instruments. So I play all different types of cellos, like from the very original cellos that had 3 to 5 strings and were tuned differently all the way up to modern cellos. And in addition to playing cello, I also play viola da gamba, which is mainly what I'm going to be playing at the festival this summer in August. In Vancouver. And viola da gamba, it's kind of similar to a cello in some sense that it has strings and it's played with a bow, but it's kind of like the cousin of the cello. It's from a different string family. And it has 6 different strings. It's tuned kind of like a guitar is, with like a third in the middle. So you can play like lots of chords on it and you bow it underhand. And it's a really cool instrument. It's super historical and you don't really see them nowadays. They kind of fell out of fashion. So that's kind of interesting, I think, to, you know, study. And so I play all these kind of historical instruments that like you don't really get to see very often and that are featured in festivals like Early Music Vancouver. And so yeah, that's what I do in my life. I play lots of different instruments and I really enjoy playing lots of different instruments. Like I never really like to only play one. I like to mess around. And one of my favorite things is when someone asks me, can you play this? And I say, well, no, but I can learn. And I've done that a few times and it's been really fun. And so, yeah, that's what I do. I also in my day-to-day life work full time for a symphony orchestra, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. And I help run their community engagement and education programs for lifelong learning, basically surrounded by music. And I love doing that too. I'm very passionate about talking to people about music and connecting with people about music. And one of my favorite things is just getting to share, you know, with people and hear their music and share my music with them and kind of create something new. And that's what I do.
Very cool. And as a, I always ask this to my musicians, what music genre, artist, song are you currently obsessed with?
Oh no. Well, that's okay. This is going to sound horrible, but I have music running in my head so much that I find that I really only listen to podcasts most of the time. So I always feel like such a horrible musician when I say that, but I love Radiolab and This American Life and podcasts like that. Like any sort of learning podcast, I love those. But if I had to choose a music, like I love listening to early like Renaissance music, like Jordi Savall and stuff like that. And one of my favorite conductors is Rene Jacobs, and he has all these recordings of period instruments and orchestras playing like the music of Beethoven on Beethoven style instruments and stuff like that. And so if I am listening to music, it's usually something like that. Or then sometimes in order to feel cool, I put on like the top 50 hits of the day so that like I can kind of be up to date with people. But because like I work with kids, so I want to know the lingo. But you know, yeah, I listen to podcasts.
That is, hey, as a as a podcast producer, I support this message.
I didn't even put that together, but yeah, that was not, that wasn't, I wasn't trying to get on your good side, but I'm happy to hear I'm there.
Yeah. And also, you're not the first musician to say this. I have had, yeah, other musicians who are like, I don't really listen to music. And I'm like, you know what? Fair enough. You do you.
It's like if you do it all day, like your brain gets tired of it, I feel like, you know, and like in the background, like when I finish practicing it, I'm just playing the music that I already had, like that I've been working on in the background. And so it's just like it's constantly there. And sometimes you just want a break, you know? Like it's just, yeah. But
I get it.
I feel really bad about it. So
No, don't feel bad about it. It's just, I don't know. I guess most people, like, you don't really think about just how much musicians deal with music. It's not only playing it, but even when you're not playing it, you're thinking about it. And so I guess it occupies so much of your mind that it's normal that you kind of want a break from it.
it's not like a 9-to-5 job. It's like I'm thinking about music all the time and I can't get it. Like I love it and I'm obsessed with it. But sometimes I want to, you know, listen to a podcast and learn something like a normal person, you know? It's, yeah.
Yeah, as you should. And so, if I'm not mistaken, you don't come from a family of musicians. So, how did your passion for music and these specific instruments come about? And how were your parents slash family's reaction when you wanted to pursue music professionally?
Yeah, you're correct. I don't come from a family of professional musicians, but I come from a family of great lovers of music and great amateur musicians. So yeah, I was the first person in my family to like really pursue music if you're looking at my extended family. But I, you know, my mom, you know, when I was a kid, she taught piano lessons. And she played piano throughout high school, but then she got a degree in art history when she went to college, and in library research science as well. And so she worked in libraries, and in she actually worked, you know, at the Library of Congress and the National Art Gallery for a little while when I was a kid. But when I was born, she had three children who were pretty young, and so she started teaching piano. And she built a piano studio, and she still to this day teaches. She's like 50 students, and she doesn't have a degree in it or anything, but she taught herself really like and built a method and is very successful. And so she yeah, so we would come home from school and she'd teach lessons, you know, while we you know did our homework and stuff like that. And it was a way that she could like contribute to the family income and support us all and still be at home and not have to pay for childcare and stuff, you know. And so I grew up with like the piano always in the background. And my parents put me into kinder music classes when I was like 6 months old, where you like sway to Mozart, you know, and you start like banging on drums when you're like a year old and stuff. So I like to think that I was like I started training when I was 6 months old. I was a baby. Yeah, you know. Just like all the great. Yeah. So I always grew up surrounded by music because my mom, you know, she was an amateur pianist and a piano teacher. And so there was always music in my house growing up. And I played a lot of different instruments. Like in my family, it was required that you learn to play the piano. Because my parents, you know, just they wanted us to be well-rounded. So we would play sports, but we would also play piano and they, you know, wanted us to read a lot and you know, and then once you got into middle school in America, once you get into middle school, you have to choose an instrument and play either in band or orchestra or sing in chorus. And I wasn't gonna sing in chorus. And my mom wanted me to play cello. And so I started playing cello in my middle school orchestra. And then, you know, things just kind of tumbled from there where I got really into it and I would like watch videos and teach myself how to play. And so my mom, you know, reached out to some people she knew and got me started with cello lessons and such. And then fast forward a little bit and I ended up at the Eastman School of Music for my undergraduate degree, which is in Rochester, New York. And Eastman is a really incredible school for cellists, but I was like really like out of my league, I felt like when I was there. Because, I'd had lessons and but I'd never really taken cello very seriously. I kind of just on a whim applied to a bunch of conservatories because like my teacher at the time was like, I think you could do this. And I was like, money to go to college? Okay, I'll do that. And so I started out as like I wanted to be a double degree and I wanted to study biology and cello. And then my first week at Eastman, I was walking around the practice rooms and listening to all the other cellists, and I was like, oh man, I am in trouble. I cannot play the cello like these people can play the cello. And once I, came to know them, they had come from all these like pre-college programs like Juilliard and Manhattan, and I didn't have that background. I like barely knew how to play a scale. So I decided, well, I'm here, I'm receiving these scholarships to go to Eastman, like I'm going to focus on cello. So I dropped the double major, and that same week that I was feeling really like a fish out of water, I met this undergraduate student, Lydia Becker, who I always reference and like to tell her that she ruined my life, because she dragged me to Eastman's Collegium Musicum. And this is a very long-winded story. I'm very sorry. I can't tell it shortly, but she dragged me to this Collegium Musicum where they were playing old music on old instruments. And she said, here's a Baroque cello, like learn how to play it. And we need more Baroque cellists. And so I said, okay, I don't really know you, but okay. And she introduced me to these people, Paul Odet and Crystal Telemann, who in my field are like gods of early music. And like Paul Odet is like one of the greatest lute players in the history of the lute. And he's just like the most amazing teacher. And the way he thinks about music is really enticing it's very smart and intellectual, and it's informed from years of research and study. And I found that so attractive because here I was at Eastman and I was like, I don't know anything about the cello. I have never actually put any real time into learning how to play this instrument. I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And here's this thing that like people are telling me, if I read all these treatises and I learn about the history of the instrument, I can be really good at it and kind of one up my peers in some sense and find like a niche that I can be really, really good at. And so I Baroque music during that period that I was at Eastman became my home. It was my place where I felt like, okay, I might not be the flashiest cellist ever. I might not, be able to play Prokofiev's Sinfonia Concertante, but you know what? I know a lot about continuo. I know a lot about bass lines, and every singer is going to have to hire me for their recital because they need someone who knows how to do that. And so it was like a cottage industry that I built up while I was at Eastman. And then my junior year, I decided there was this other kid, Ryan, who was in my string quartet, and he was a violinist. And he decided that he wanted to play viola da gamba. And he started playing it, and he picked it up, and he like could pretty much immediately he could play it. And I saw him doing this, and I was like, well, I can't let him steal the viola da gamba. Like, what? That's I've always wanted to play the viola da gamba. Like, it's one of my favorite instruments. And if he could pick it up and learn to play it so quickly, I bet I could do it too. So I picked it up, and I could not make a noise on it for like 4 months. I was horrible at it. So like halfway through my junior year, I'm like picking up this instrument for the first time. I'm like, I gotta show up, Ryan. We were very competitive with each other. We were in a bunch of chamber music groups together. And so anyways, I was like, I gotta learn. I can't let Ryan beat me in this. So I would practice the viola da gamba every night from like 2 a.m. to like 3 a.m. because I had insomnia. And I lived in a building that had practice rooms in the basement in Rochester. It was University Place. If anyone's looking for a good apartment in Rochester, they have practice rooms. Key. And so I would go there like every night, and that's when I like learned to play viola da gamba because I was like, I can't let Ryan beat me at this. Like I have to be better than Ryan at viola da gamba. And it took me months, but I got really good at viola da gamba. And I was like, okay, well now what do I do? And then I auditioned for Juilliard and got into Juilliard in 2020, and then went to Juilliard and did a double master's degree in Baroque cello and viola da gamba. And now that's my job.
That's
That was so.
amazing. It's funny that you were kind of given instruments and then now it's become your life.
Yeah,
It's
well,
great.
It is funny because, like, so for some reason, I always stumble into things and then I'm like, wait, this is my great passion. Like, I didn't know that much about Baroque music or anything, but once I really got it and it became my thing at Eastman, it was like what I was known for. And I kind of just stumbled into it. But once I really got it, it gave me this like sense of identity that was really lacking in my musical world. You know, I didn't really think of myself as a great cellist. I didn't feel like I had anything special to say when I was playing modern cello. And it just instilled like a sense of self-confidence in me because I was able to do all this research that backed up what I was doing. And so I felt like I was making informed decisions and I knew how to shape, you know, music because I had read all this stuff and I learned how to play these instruments that were old. And it made me feel like I had a niche and I had something that I was really good at that I knew a lot about. And I really needed that while I was at Eastman. I needed something that felt like it was mine and I was good at, you know. It's hard.
No,
It's hard.
it really is. I totally understand it. And I'm glad you were able to find that thing that you think is, perfect for you and is your passion now. It's really important. And I'm wondering, out of all the instruments you play, how often would you say, like, you play the modern cello?
Very rarely now. I teach a lot, so I pull it out when I'm teaching, but I really am able to specialize in playing historical cellos. Like, I really don't play a cello with an end pin very often. And I'm very thankful for that because it doesn't feel like my voice. Like, it's not my instrument, you know. Whereas the earlier cellos, the historical cellos, like feel like they're an extension of me and I feel so at home with them. So yeah, I really don't play modern cello that much anymore, and I'm okay with it, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you're totally happy with that.
Yeah, like I sometimes I still feel a little bit like less than because I don't play modern cello anymore. Like that other people will look at me and be like, "Oh, she can only play Baroque cello or something like that."
But can they play the other instruments that you play?
No.
See, there you go.
Yeah, I think that there's like kind of a stigma in classical music that like people who play the old, earlier instruments are just like failed modern players. And I guess I kind of buy into that a little bit sometimes in myself, even though I know that's not true. I chose to do this other path, but I also chose it because I felt like I was good at it and I wasn't good at the other one. So you know, it comes up for me sometimes where I'm like, maybe I'm a failed modern instrumentalist, but I'm also really good at gamba. So maybe it's just the path I was meant to go on. I don't know.
I think it's the latter. I mean, if you can teach the modern cello, how bad can you really be? Come on. Also, you did a double master's, you said, in Juilliard. And can you tell me a little bit about that experience? Because Juilliard, I feel like everyone knows about that school. Very good, very intense. And master's tend to be more stressful than undergrad. And you did a double master's. So, how was that experience for you?
It was great. I mean, it was really, really hard. I started at Juilliard in 2020, in the fall of 2020, which was right when the world was kind of trying to restart out of the COVID pandemic. And it was awful at first because we weren't allowed to be with each other. Like we couldn't sit any closer than 6 feet apart. We were all masked and like couldn't really interact with each other outside of rehearsals. And I was so lonely because I moved to the New York City, and I didn't know anyone yet. And I didn't know anyone at Juilliard. And it was really hard that first year. And then I actually ended up with a shoulder injury in the beginning of my first semester there. I had this thing called brachial neuritis. Basically, my immune system attacked my brachial plexus, which is the part of your nerve. It's an area in your shoulder right about here where under your collarbone where all the arm nerves, the brachial nerves, pass through before going down into your arm. And my immune system started attacking it and I started losing feeling in my pinky especially and my ring finger on my left hand, and I started having really horrible pins and needle sensations all throughout my arm, and I had those for like 4 weeks. And then after that, it subsided, but I was left with a lot of weakness in my hand, and I really couldn't feel or move my pinky. And so that was the beginning of my Juilliard experience, was this horrendous, first of all, complete isolation and loneliness that I felt. And on top of that, I couldn't play. I like completely couldn't play. I couldn't control my pinky for a while. And so my first year at Juilliard was like one of the worst years of my life. And then I ended up having to take a medical leave from school and go home because it was just so stressful. There was no money for people. I didn't ha Juilliard has this free historical performance program, and so I wasn't paying anything to be there, but I still had to pay my rent, and so I was working as much as I could, but like I also was going through this really traumatic medical thing, and I was super lonely. I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And so I ended up moving home for a few months, and I went through really intensive physical therapy in the summer of like 2021. And then I was back at school in the fall of 2021, and then I finished my degree basically in the next 2 years. Like I kind of just started over. So I started over in the fall of 2021, and I was doing the full double masters, and we were back like after the COVID, pandemic had subsided a little bit. We were able to travel internationally, and so I kind of got like a do-over, and I was able to basically relearn how to play my instrument, which was really stressful during that very first semester. And by the second semester, that spring of 22, I was able to travel internationally with groups, and we were it was incredible. I mean, the Juilliard HP program, I think it's hard. It's really hard. You basically give your life over to them, and they tell you when to be where and what you're gonna play. And in some ways, it's like gruesome, like the schedule that they give you and the just the control that they have over your life. But in other ways, it's like this incredible bonding experience where this group of like 20 people like lives and breathes Baroque music every moment of their life. They're just talking about Baroque music. You're studying treatises. You get to meet people who are as passionate as you are about just the most niche, awkward, weird things in music history. You're with a group of people who's like, attempting to use the Guidonian hand to sing, chant and stuff together, and doing stuff like that with other people and getting to connect with them that way made those last 2 years that I was at Juilliard like one of the greatest periods of my life. So it was really, really hard. I would come home from school and, I would go back to my parents' house in Virginia where they still live now, and I would just like sleep for like so long. And just like, I was just so burned out at the end of every semester. But during the semester, it was like, just the most incredible music making. They have this collection of instruments, and I was able to kind of pull out random ones like the lyrone and the viol and the bastavion and all these other instruments that I play now professionally. I only got to learn how to play them because I had that space at Juilliard to do it. And they had those instruments. So for me, it was just incredible. I mean, I borrowed more instruments, I think, than anyone has ever borrowed in the history of that program because I just was so curious and I wanted to learn everything and try everything out on the actual period instruments. So I loved my time at Juilliard. I mean, would I go back and do it again? It probably would kill me, but it was amazing too. And I'm really glad that I did it. And yeah, I think Juilliard has this kind of like, oh, Juilliard, kind of picture around it. But the people are really not like that, I still talk a lot with Karin Brooks, who's the dean. She's the head of the Juilliard HP program, and she's like a great mentor and friend to me. And she really like, she was like my second parent while I was at that program. I went through a couple other medical things while I was there, and she like she picked me up for my first colonoscopy, which is like hilarious. Like the dean of your academic program, like she like picked me up. I was like loopy on anesthesia, and I was like, "Hey, come Like it was super funny, and we went on tours together, these like groups of like we're like in our 20s and we're like hanging out in the middle of nowhere France for like 2 weeks together and stuff. It was like super cool, and yeah, the people were great, like yeah, anyways.
Yeah, it sounds like a good experience. I mean, yeah, as exhausting as it sounds, it's also great that you had such a good rapport with your dean that, you know, you were able to be picked up from your colonoscopy.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she does that for other students, but I feel like I was pretty special. But
I love
yeah.
that. I'm sure you were. And yeah, I don't even know the name of the dean of my program that I graduated from. So you mentioned that your first year before you restarted, your first year in Juilliard was isolating, well, because of the conditions, you know. And so how was finding community after getting your restart? And then after you had that community there, now that you live in Baltimore, what was that change like for you? And were you able to find a community for yourself in Baltimore as well? And I'm sorry, this is too many questions at once. And was that through music?
While I was at Juilliard, I feel like I went through like just this huge change in terms of like self-discovery and stuff like that. Like I came out as bisexual, and like I also went into therapy for like the first time in my life, to deal with some long-standing, issues that I had with eating, and I hadn't ever addressed any of those things. And so like I think it was like a very self-transformative period for me, where like I kind of realized what's really important to me, and I think even beyond like music, what I realized was really important to me is connecting with other people. I love like I'm an introvert. I know I probably don't seem that way. I am really good at being extroverted for my job, and for what I do, and I'm really good at being extroverted when it comes to like connecting with other people. I want to hear other people's stories and like and talk with them, and I think what I discovered at Juilliard is that I have this kind of desperate need to connect with people. Like I just want to know people. I love like knowing people, and I want to feel connected to them, and I think that has helped me the most in leaving school is that my priority, I think, in life shifted, where it wasn't like I was desperate to get the next gig. It was more I was like desperate to, have friends and be honest with people and share with people more. And I'm still working on that a lot. Like I'm not the most open person. Like I said, I'm actually kind of introverted. Like when we finish this podcast, I'll probably go and lay on my bed for like an hour and just do nothing because it exhausts me. But it exhausts me in a good way, where it's like, oh yay, I like got to talk to someone and like share a moment with people. And so I think when I left Juilliard, I was really nervous because all of my friends lived in New York City. And the reason I moved to Baltimore is because my partner Megan won a position in the Baltimore Symphony for 1 year. And she had been out in the Phoenix Symphony the year before, and so we'd been apart, and she was one of the greatest things that happened to me while I was at Juilliard too, because we met and bonded. This is another really tangential story, but we got assigned to go to this school in Brooklyn through the community engagement program at Juilliard through this Morse Fellowship. But I don't know what happened. Like for some reason, we were assigned to go and teach drama at this school out in Brooklyn. She plays the French horn, and I do early music, and we were supposed to teach drama.
Have you ever done either of you? No.
No, never. And it was like a 45-minute train ride out to Brooklyn that we would make like twice a week. And so we got to know each other really well. And we would just make stuff up. Like we would just show up, and when we showed up, the class was like already working on this like play about like Superman, kind of like it was like superheroes. Like they were all supposed to be superheroes. And there's just like one kid that will always stick out in my memory because he decided to name himself Cheese Man. And like all he did every class, he would come up to me and he'd be like, "I'm Cheese Man, right?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, you're playing Cheese Man." And he'd be like, "Okay, cool." And I'd say, "Well, what are your special powers as Cheese Man?" And he'd be like, "I don't know, but I'm Cheese Man." Like he wouldn't engage with anything, but he'd be like, "I'm Cheese Man, though." And we'd be like, "Yep, you go, kid. Yeah." So, anyways, I totally veered off topic here, but I don't know. Yeah, when I moved to Baltimore, we didn't really know anyone there either, and I kind of like walked my way into this job part-time helping out in the education department at the Baltimore Symphony because I had a lot of experience working in education. And then someone quit in the education department, so I applied for that full-time job and I got that. And then I've been working there ever since. I've been working there for like 7 months now, and for some reason they just promoted me to Associate Director of Education there. So that's cool. I mean, I feel like, again, as I was saying earlier with Baroque music, like I stumble into things and then I'm like, oh, I'm passionate about this. I like this, you know? And so that has kind of happened to me in Baltimore too, where I've been like, oh, this is another side of me that I kind of explored a little bit at Juilliard, but now I get to like fully flesh out. You know, I'm passionate about community. I'm passionate about connecting to people. Well, music, I'm also passionate about community engagement. Nice. You know, and so yeah, so I think in Baltimore, it's been actually not really through music, but through other parts of me that have come out. You know, I've really only played two gigs in Baltimore, you know. I usually travel a lot to play in other places. You know, I traveled like twice, two or three times a month since we moved to Baltimore to play in different places. And that's nice too. I mean, I like traveling, but I also like having kind of a home base. So it's been nice to like come home to Baltimore and have a full-time job and benefits and a partner and friends who we know through the symphony, but it's like another side of me that they know. They know this like arts administrator side of me. So I actually think that's been a really interesting part of my move to Baltimore is that like they all know this other person who's an arts administrator. And then I have all these friends in the early music world who know me as a musician who's like the weirdo who plays all the, you know, bass instruments and in the, yeah. And in the like larger classical music world, like early music people are like the nerds, you know? So, and then on top of it, I play like Lirone and stuff that like no one's ever heard of, you know? And so I'm like even nerdier. So it's like I have all these different identities and these different populations that I exist in now.
It's really interesting though, because I think, of course, because you are doing a different job with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, but at the same time, moving like cities, states, countries, and the people you surround yourself with in those two different places, it's still they still get to know a different you. And yeah, that's really interesting and I would say a unique experience. And because I myself, so I live in Vancouver right now, but I am originally from Turkey. And so when I moved here, I was like, you know, they're gonna know me, know the same Sarah. It's gonna be perfectly fine. And now I realize if I put my Turkish friends and my Vancouver friends together, they're probably gonna be talking about two separate people.
Yeah, right. And then
Yeah.
I go through these like cycles. I was like just talking to somebody about this too, where I'm like, well, does that mean that there's like a fake third me that like and they don't no one actually knows the real me? And she was like, no, like that just means they know different parts of you that are all in balance inside you. And I thought that was nice, but I still have that like imposter syndrome where I'm like, what if no one knows me? You know, like I don't know. But I do enjoy like being able to have different kind of spheres that I operate in and stuff, you know. Like it's nice to rediscover yourself in a different place, I think. You know, I don't know if that happened for you, but for me it was like in every new place I got to like kind of come out as myself again and like be like, okay, well, yeah, this is what's important to me and I'm gonna recenter myself on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I fully agree. So you mentioned that you liked traveling and you do travel for your job, and also you're coming to Vancouver to perform with Early Music Vancouver for their 2024 Summer Festival. So I have two questions about that. The first, let's start with the first one. Can you tell me about your performance within this festival and what people can expect from it?
I am really thrilled to be coming back to Early Music Vancouver. I last year came for the first time and I had just really a wonderful time. And so this year I'm coming back. They're calling me a next generation artist this year, which I think is code for we know she looks young, but still come and listen to her. So within that, me and this other fellow Hans are putting on a recital. With Christina Hutton at the keyboard. And it's going to be a program of a little bit of Bach, a little bit of Lieder, and then I'll play some of my favorite stuff from the Abel Drechsel manuscript, which is this manuscript of music that wasn't actually discovered until like 2015. And I think it was like found in some random family's like trunk somewhere. Yeah, so I'm doing a recital with Hans centered around Bach and Lieder and Bach's son CBE Bach, and Kunel and Abel will also be on that program, who both are connected to Bach kind of tangentially. Like Kunel was a student in the St. Thomas Choir School when Bach was teaching there, and so it'll be really kind of a fun smorgasbord of Baroque music surrounding Bach, which is cool. I like doing stuff like that. Yeah, so that's one program that I'm playing in. And then I'm playing I think it's like the night before, I'm playing in a program with some of my favorite people, Chris Baggin, as well. Who's a Baroque flute player and violinist, Poey Myers. Yeah, we're playing a program of Bach and Telemann. So there's a Telemann Paris Quartet, which are these really fantastic pieces of music that are for there's a two treble lines, so usually it's a traverso or a Baroque flute and a violin, and then there's a solo kind of obbligato gamba line, and then there will be a harpsichordist Chris as well. But there'll be these Telemann Paris quartets, and they're kind of matched with a bunch of Bach's great masterpieces. So there's a Bach flute partita on the program, I believe, and I'll be playing the second Bach Gamba Sonata, which is one of my all-time favorite pieces. I've never actually gotten to perform it, so it'll be my first time performing it, and so I'm thrilled to be able to do that in Vancouver. I think the Early Music Vancouver Festival is truly like unmatched. It's really one of the great festivals, and I think it's the people that make it great. Like I've never been to a festival that felt like so welcoming and warm, and like everyone was there to have the best time and support everyone else in having the best musical experience. Like last year was just kind of it was crazy how many amazing artists that Susie, the director, brought in. And so this year I feel like it's going to be no different, and I'm really excited to see what she's cooked up. There's some other really fantastic concerts. Like I think there's a Monteverdi concert and a Bach cantata concert. So there's something for everyone, you know.
Yeah, sounds like a good time. And so, from your last time in Vancouver, is there anything that you've learned in about could be about your instrument, about yourself, about Vancouver that you will be bringing with you this time around?
Well, last time I was in Vancouver, I got really impulsive and shaved like half my head. And it's because I was like walking around Vancouver and I was like, I either want to get a tattoo or a piercing, or I want to do something weird to my hair. And then I walked past this place that had $15 Canadian dollar too, 15 Canadian dollar happy hour haircuts. And I was like, you know what? This is a sign. I need to do this. And so I walked in, and the guy didn't really speak English super well. So he kind of misunderstood what I was saying and shaved off like the front too. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, it's a little more of an undercut than I wanted. But okay, well, I'll bring the hair back. The hair will still be shaved. I'm excited to go to Granville Island again. That was cool. And Stanley Park, it was also cool. I'm mostly just excited to see all my friends again. I mean, you develop really close friendships with people at these like festivals because you spend a lot of time together in a really short period of time. And so you kind of bond a lot. And so it's really fun to go back year after year and see the same people. Like, that's one of my favorite things in the summer is that we all kind of gather at various different festivals and you get to see all your old buddies and be like, what's new with you? So I'm excited about that. We'll see if I get, maybe I'll do something weird, again this time. Like, maybe I'll get a tattoo this time or a piercing or something. Sorry, Mom.
It's not for sure that you're going to do it today. So, hey. But
We'll see what happens, okay?
it's just fun doing impulsive things.
There's worse impulsive things that I could do. That's what I always say, It,
That is so true.
was I expecting that barber to cut off the front of my hair? No. But you know what? You live and you learn.
Did you want to get a normal undercut? And that's what happened? Oh, that's so funny.
I tried to describe it to him. I was like, I just want the undercut. Like, I have really thick hair. And so it's like, oh, this will be so nice in the summer. Plus, it's like a dramatic kind of thing that I can do that'll fulfill this impulsive desire. And then he just started going for it. And I was like, okay. And I love it now. I mean, at first I was like, oh no, what have I done? And I hid it from my mom for a few days. And then I put a picture of it up on Instagram and got a message like, okay, from her. And yeah, it's fun.
That's yeah, I love that.
I love
And
them.
now you're rocking
Yeah.
it.
My
Yeah,
mom's
shout
super.
out to your mom.
I shouldn't make her sound like she's not super chill. She's great. I love my mom very much. Shout out to Mom. She's amazing. Yeah. Sorry, Mom.
That is unfortunately all the time we have, but I think I've learned a lot about you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me, for coming on here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was nice to get to know you too a little bit.